So our next speaker is Rick Pannon with his talk, Vapor Phase Soldering with a Deep Fryer. So Rick has been doing hardware design for some time now. He actually considers himself a full stack developer from the hardware world. So basically going from software to hardware, it's everything from doing circuits to firmware development on embedded Linux. He usually does his stuff in small series production in order to be able to give out some of the samples to the community, where he has also been spending a bunch of time. He's trying to slowly move to a process of being able to do as much as possible in-house, and this talk is a result of that process. Please give a great round of applause, at least at home, to Rick Pannon. Thank you.
Hi. Welcome to my talk, Vapor Phase Soldering with a Deep Fryer. In this talk, I'll first explain the reflow process in detail, and then I'll show you how vapor phase soldering works and how to do it with a cheap deep fryer. Reflow soldering basically consists of three steps. First, you apply some solder paste to a circuit board. Then you place your components onto the solder paste. And finally, you apply some heat to do the actual soldering. For that, you need some solder paste. Solder paste comes in 100,000 varieties. Most of them has different melting points and different ingredients. But the common lead-free paste that you use these days melt about 210 to 225 degrees. And the majority of the solder paste has a limited shelf life and has to be kept in a fridge if you're not using it. So for home use, I would recommend using the solder paste that comes in syringes, because it's a lesser amount and it probably won't go bad unless you use a lot of solder paste. Also, it's a bit easier to apply. All solder paste comes with a temperature profile that tells you exactly how many seconds you should ramp up the temperature to a certain amount. And then you have a soaking phase where for several seconds you keep the temperature at the same point. And then for a very short amount of time, you ramp up the temperature to the reflow phase. That's when the actual soldering happens, and then you have to remove the temperature to cool it down. For applying the solder paste, there are two basic methods. The first one is a direct paste application. So you can do that manually by just taking a syringe and applying a small amount of solder paste to each pad where you want to put your SMD components. Then the next step would be a modified CNC mill or 3D printer where you put in a solder paste syringe as a tool head and then load in your paste layer from your electronics design software, and printer then, or the CNC mill, automatically applies the solder paste to the pads on the board. And for industrial applications, there are also inkjet printer-like devices that apply the solder paste automatically to PCBs. But yeah, these devices are very expensive and probably not suitable for home use. For home users, I would recommend getting a stencil for solder paste applications, because stencil have become very cheap in the recent years, and it's much simpler to apply the solder paste with a stencil than doing it manually. So stencils can be used also in different ways. The simplest and cheapest one is just putting your boards on a desk and using some tape to apply your stencil to it. So you position it over your board and then you fix it to your desk. And after that, you use a rake to wipe your solder paste to the board. I will show that later in the demo. For home users, I would definitely recommend getting frameless stencils. When you order a stencil in your at your PCB house, you can always have a checkbox where you can say, I want a frame or no frame. The first time I ordered a stencil, I took the framed version, and that looks like this. So you get a gigantic thing, and there in the middle is actually my, can't really see it, maybe like this. There are, this is the actual board, and yeah, this is the stencil. It has some aluminium framing around it, and that's definitely very expensive for shipping. So you'd rather want something like this, so a frameless stencil that can be used very easily for the method where you just put it on your desk. If you do a lot of the same boards, then there are stencil printers or manual stencil printers. That's where you use the stencils with a frame. But these stencil printers are not cheap, and I think the tape on desk method is pretty simple to use. So unless you make a batch production of boards, I would always just get a frameless stencil and do it on your desk. For industrial environments, there are automatic stencil printers that have a conveyor belt, pull in the PCB, do all the positioning, and then automatically apply the solder paste to the stencil. After you've put the solder paste on your board, then you need to place your components. Again, the cheapest way and what most home users will do is just take all the components manually with some tweezers and to put it on your board. Because of the way that reflow soldering works, and you will see that later in the demo, you don't have to position them too exactly, because the surface tension of the solder paste when it starts to melt will pull the components into position. So you don't have to be too precise with positioning. You shouldn't place it right next to the footprint, but if it's not exactly where it should be, then this should be resolved while in the reflow soldering process later. I would always recommend getting some good tweezers if you do the manual placement, and not using the €2 things from the DIY store, because they will bend easily, and so some good tweezers really help with this process. The next step would be a pick and place machine that takes a file from your design program that has all the positions of the components and the rotation that it needs after picking up the components from a reel or from a tray, and then uses little suction cups to place the components on the board. These have become a little bit cheaper in the recent years, but it's quite a hassle to program it for a lot of components. So unless you're doing more than 20 boards or so, it's not really worth getting a pick and place machine and programming it and getting all the rotation and the pickup correctly. For projects where you do 1 to 5 boards, I always do the manual placement. And then in industrial environments, there are also these pick and place machine like in the middle, but for very high volume production, there are also machines called ship shooters that have a revolving turret that picks up components and then shoot them to the PCB. Once your components are placed on the board, you will need to solder it. And the cheapest method here is to use a hot air gun. If you ever did this, you will know that it's not as easy as it looks. So you set your hot air gun to a temperature and you set the airflow. And often if you set the airflow too high, then you blow your components off the board. Or if you set the temperature too high, you burn some components, or you desolder stuff that you don't want to desolder on other parts of the board. So it's mostly used if you do replacement of single components. So you want to rework a chip or replace one. Or if you do really just a few components, then this can also be the method to use. But I'd always recommend, if you do that, then use some solder paste that has a lower melting point. So I listed one from ChipQuick here that I am using for hot air reflowing, and that melts at just 135 degrees C. So that makes it way easier to get the setting right on your hot air gun. The next thing is using a modified pizza oven. So you get a cheap pizza oven, and you put some thermocouples into it to have a good temperature measurement. And then most hobby users add some controller, for example, an Arduino-based controller, that then tries to keep the temperature profile that you've seen on the solder paste. That works well for some stuff, but because these ovens have these heating coils on the top, you have to be really careful with the placement of your PCB underneath it, because there are some spots that are hotter and some are colder. And in general, it's hard to get good results with a pizza oven. Often you have to add some airflow to get a better distribution of the temperature. Sometimes it's hard to ramp up the temperature fast enough. And yeah, it's kind of a hassle. So I also used this method, and that's why I switched to vapor phase soldering, because that's a process that's much easier to control at home. And in industrial environments, you have large reflow ovens that have different zones with different temperature, and then you have a conveyor belt, and your PCB goes on this conveyor belt through the oven and through the different zones. And then by just adjusting the speed of the conveyor, it's very easy to control the heat that is applied to the board. Instead of using an oven for reflow soldering, you can also use vapor phase soldering. And that's a very simple concept that has been around since the 1970s that works by using a phase chamber with a heater on the bottom. Phase chamber is just a sophisticated word for a cooking pot. So yeah, just like a cooking pot, you have some kind of container, and underneath it you have a heat source, and then inside of the container you have a liquid called galden. Galden is a liquid plastic that has some very unique properties. So the most important one is that it has a boiling temperature of about 200 degrees. So there's galden for different temperatures, just like solder paste. So there's one that evaporates at 170 degrees and some that evaporates in up to 260 degrees. And now when you apply heat to this galden, at some point it begins to boil, and then it forms a vapor that is heavier than air, so it stays at the bottom of this chamber. And that way you have a low temperature on the top of the chamber and a higher temperature on the bottom of the chamber. And the temperature will be exactly the boiling temperature of the galden. So it's just like with water. if you cook water, then you get water vapor, and unless you put it under pressure, the water vapor will have exactly 100 degrees and not more. And that's just like with the Galden vapor, that if you have Galden that is has a boiling point of 230 degrees, then the vapor will have exactly 230 degrees. And unless all the Galden in the phase chamber has evaporated, nothing will change. So you can never get a too high temperature. And in most of these chambers for vapor phase soldering, you also have a cooling system on the top. So because Galden is pretty expensive, you don't want to lose any of it. Now, if you put a PCB in this chamber and slowly lower it into the vapor, then the temperature on the PCB will slowly rise to the Galden's boiling temperature. And as this Galden vapor condensates on the parts of the PCB, and it does it everywhere where it where the vapor touches the PCB, then it will very evenly heat up all the components and also the solder paste on the PCB to exactly the Galden's boiling temperature. And that way you have a process that's very easy to control, because it's not really possible to overheat your components or the solder paste. So by timing the lowering and the lifting of the PCB into the vapor, you can very nicely follow the temperature profile of your soldering paste. One drawback of this process is that the Galden is very expensive. So if you have a large industrial vapor phase reflow oven, you need some liters of it. And as you see here, 5 liters costs about $1,000. But for the process I'm showing now with the small deep fryer, you just need a very small amount. So I use about 250 milliliters. And at least in Europe, you can get 400 milliliters of the 230 degree Galden at beta layout for 88 euros. So for the deep fryer vapor phase soldering, you need to buy a deep fryer for about 100 euros and Galden for 90 euros. So the whole process can be done for under 200 euros. And if you're worried about the safety, Galden is actually very safe, because it's basically inert. So it's no problem if you breathe in the vapor or if you even swallow it. The safety instructions that come with the Galden say, if you breathe it in, then you should go outside and take two or three deep breaths. And if you swallow it, you should drink 2 glasses of water. In an industrial environment, you have these large vapor phase machines that also use a conveyor belt and automate the whole process. And yeah, these are very expensive. But for lab use and prototyping, there are these smaller machines that also cost a couple of thousand euros. But they are basically a container with a heater on the bottom, a temperature probe, and some kind of controller. And these are exactly the same as deep fryers. So deep fryers also have some kind of heating coil at the bottom, and they have a controller, and somewhere there's a temperature probe to keep the temperature that you set on the controller. And I've looked at lots of these devices, and finally I found one that fits very good to my use case and the size of the boards that I'm usually making. And that is a WMF mini fryer. It is quite small, and it has a lid that is sealed, so there's not much vapor escaping. And a very nice thing it is that when the lid is closed, by turning the handle, you can lower and lift the basket inside. It has a container that can be taken out that is quite flat on the bottom. And that is also important because if you have the heating coils inside of the container, you need a lot of the expensive Galden to put that much in it that it fills it up above the heating rods. And because the heating rod here is in the bottom, you just need about 250 milliliters, so the whole bottom is covered with Galden. The temperature sensor in this device is at the point where if you put in cooking oil, then it's just where the lower level indicator is on the container. And the temperature sensor is basically outside, and it measures the temperature of the container at a certain height. When we're using this for vapor phase soldering, this temperature sensor will be above the liquid, which is pretty nice because it will basically measure the temperature of the vapor and not of the liquid. The only drawback is that it can just be set to 190 degrees and not more, which is, I think, kind of due to the fact that you shouldn't fry something like potatoes with a higher temperature, because there can be some cancerous stuff developing if you fry it with too much heat. But yeah, that's no problem for vapor phase soldering. So we have to somehow modify it that we can turn the temperature higher. Fortunately, this device doesn't have any electronics. It's all pretty discrete. So it has the temperature probe, and that has a certain resistance. And then you have the knob in front where you set the temperature. And that's also just a potentiometer where you set a resistance, and then it just compares the resistance of the temperature probe to the resistance that you set on this potentiometer. And if it's higher, it switches off the heater. So you just have to turn the knob a little bit further than you can to have a higher temperature range on that device. And you can do that by opening up the bottom, and then there's a little metal piece that stops the potentiometer from turning too far. You can take a screwdriver and bend that up a bit, and I guess it works the same for all the cheap deep fryers on the market. So they should be all basically the same and just have a mechanical limiter that can be removed. So yeah, you bend up this little metal piece, and then you screw the bottom part back on. And then there's a second limiter that you see when you take off the knob on the front. There's a little plastic part that also stops the knob from turning too far. So just take a sharp knife and cut away that plastic part, and then you can turn the knob as far as you want. To prevent too much of the precious Galden to escape through the lid, we also need to add some cooling. I just used an old PC cooler that I found somewhere in our basement. I also wanted to add a water cooler at some point, and looked at some water coolers for graphics cards, but the ones I found were too expensive or not really available or not really fitting, but I'm still looking to add that, and then probably I would lose even less Galden through the lid. So now let me show you how that all works. Here I prepared the board. I'm gluing it with some double-sided tape onto my desk, and add some old boards around it. The upper one I also glued to the board. Then I put the stencil on it, taped it onto the upper board, and used again an old board to rake the solder paste over it. And as you can see, that works pretty nicely. So it's not that hard to use that solder paste. Now I'm putting some components to the board, and I have attached a temperature probe to the basket. You don't really need that. It's just for this demo to show how it works. This temperature probe is not working really well, so it's not 13 degrees where I'm doing this. It's plus minus 10 degrees. I think it was damaged at some point. So you make sure that there's enough galden, that the whole bottom of the container is covered with it. Then you put your basket with your board on it and switch on the deep fryer. So I put it to about where 210 degrees would be, if it would be on the scale. And then it takes about 3 to 4 minutes until some vapor is forming on the top of the PCB. Here I waited a bit too long because I had to handle the camera. So you see it's already starting to solder. So I should have lowered it much sooner. But now I'm lowering it, and as we can see, the temperature is rising quickly to where it should be. And here you see through the glass how the soldering works and how the components are put into place by the surface tension of the solder paste. And you can just watch it through this window and see when everything is nice and shiny and everything is soldered. And then you switch, you switch off the deep fryer, raise the basket again, and wait for a few minutes for it to cool down. I didn't wait long enough here, so you see there's some vapor escaping. It's not dangerous, but it's expensive. So you should maybe wait a bit longer. And now you see we have a nicely soldered board.
Thank you so much, Rick. I think it's really cool, like reducing the friction in this entire process. I think it's important to keep be sure that it's possible to like innovate with like low amounts of resources, because as we've seen before with the community, like that's really something that drives things forward. Questions, and I was actually thinking about something myself, like in this entire process, like what has been one of the biggest obstacles, because like watching the talk, it seems like you've really overcome everything along the way when there was a little itch or something. Like what has actually proved to have been a problem? Because I guess there must have been something.
The biggest problem was finding the right deep fryer. So I ordered, I think, about three different ones. And now everywhere I'm using my browser, I get some advertisements for kitchen appliances, and I think that will last for some time. But finding one that can be modified easily and that has this flat bottom. So I ordered a lot of them and sent them back. Finding the right one, then the process is pretty easy once you have the right one. And also the modification takes just a few minutes.
Sounds a lot like trial and error on that part. I mean, it's awesome that it worked out, and I guess like it's just part of the process with like the advertising stuff.
if you do something like that and want to misuse a part, then use a private browser tab for that. Because I'm not really interested in kitchen appliances, but the algorithm doesn't know that.
That's great. And now we will be taking the questions that have come in through the internet. And so one person is asking, so if the galden is 230 degrees, can the solder be lead free? The solder paste, basically?
I'm using lead free solder for yeah, it doesn't make sense to use that at solder with this process because it works just fine. I know a lot of people who use the pizza oven method or a cheap Chinese reflow oven. They use leaded solder paste just because it's easier to get the lower temperature right. But for this, it really doesn't matter. So it works great with leaded solder paste. And also in the demo, I used lead-free solder paste. So.
That's awesome. I think that was an important thing to be able to figure out. So another person is asking, so with the discussion about fluorinated chemicals, is there a need to revisit the safety classification of the Galden, or like, is that fine?
I think so you're really using just a little of it. And there's, as long as you don't heat it up too much, it's completely safe. If you would manage to somehow heat up the Galden above 290 degrees, it would break down and there would be some hydrofluoric acid coming out of it. That would be very, very bad. But so you have to make really sure that you have enough Galden in it, because the only way that could happen, that you heat up the vapor too much, I think, would be to put too little in it. If there's just a very little bit in it, it could be that the bottom gets too hot, and then it could break down. But you really, it's hard to get the vapor above 290 degrees if it's not under pressure or anything. So I think it's pretty safe and it lasts very long. So I bought this 400 milliliters and it probably will last forever. From time to time, there's some residue in the Galden, but you can just run it through a coffee filter and then it's fine again. So it's you're not really using it up. It's just like a tool and it will last a very long time.
So, and extending on the last thing, so someone who's a bit freaked out with chemicals and stuff like that, for instance, me, like, how do you actually go about it? Like, what's the absolute worst thing that could happen?
The worst thing is the hydrofluoric acid forming when you get it too hot. So it's something, so I would recommend if you do that outside, take all the precautions, use safety goggles, use gloves. And maybe also use your FFP2 mask if you're really afraid of it, and then if you do it outside, and never look away if while you're using it. So if you're done using it, or if you walk away from it, disconnect it from the power. And as with everything, so it's really hot. You don't want something that's 230 degrees on your hands or so. So just don't be stupid.
Sounds like a same precaution.
But the Galden is actually so. If you have seen the film The Abyss, it's an old science fiction movie where they are underwater and they are breathing in a liquid that has oxygen in it to go deeper. And that is actually the same stuff. And there are you can find pictures on the internet where they have rats in small glasses with the stuff in it, and they're breathing it and. So it's really, unless you make it too hot, it's really inert and it doesn't react with anything.
I'll refrain from asking you how the movie ends.
I think, it's a long time since I've seen it. But, yeah.
No worries. Cool. So next question is, do you need to remove the condensed Galden vapor from the components, or how does that work?
There's actually very little on it, so they feel dry. So I don't clean the boards afterwards. I think that's fine, and there's not really much left. So there's stuff condensating on it, but I think most of it drops down, and they're not wet to the touch or so. So I don't clean the boards afterwards.
Okay, I think it's good in these kinds of situations to like figure out what someone who's a bit more experienced or very more experienced, like yourself, basically handles and does in that kind of situation. So One of the next questions is that if whether you have checked if the plastic can safely be heated to 230 degrees, and I think they're basically referring to the deep fryer here.
Oh, that's all. There are some plastic parts, but the container is metal, and there is on the top lid there are some plastic parts. I made some experiments first, and nothing melted. But yeah, I have to see what happens. I used it, I don't know, 10 or 20 times, and it's fine until now. But yeah, probably this device is not made for that kind of heat, but it's made for 190 degrees, and I think 230 is not too far from that. So until now, it kept up nicely. But again, yeah, it's a hack. It's not really really made for this. So for me, it works fine, but you have to be careful if you try it out yourself.
Cool. Thank you. I will just check if there are any like last on the falling rope questions. I don't know how you say that in English. And I think that was actually everything for now. So as I said previously, Rick, like, thank you so much. It's really great, especially considering that as the more you can take in at home, the easier and faster this process will be, and basically also lower the cost. And like, I at least personally feel that that's very important. So I want to say thank you. And I think that the audience agrees with me. So thanks a lot.
Okay. Then yeah, have fun soldering at home.
We will, thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye.